Today we're going to talk about the taking a leap of faith, and I think that's relevant for all of us, because in life you have to take leaps of faith. But the most obvious example, of course, is the example of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Because I think sometimes, or often, we read the story in its simplest sense. The Jewish people are, they're kind of there. You know what I'm saying? They are the players in the story. But we don't think of them as people who are struggling with the issue of whether to go out or not. And when we look deeper into the story, into the text, you'll see quite clearly, in a number of places, maybe you don't realize it, how the Bnei Yisrael are not so sure. I mean, they say it explicitly. But even more than that, it's not obvious that they want to take part in Yetziat Mitzrayim. You know, and as much as it's so obvious afterwards, we look back hindsight, oh, Pesach, Hashem saved them, etc., etc. When you're in the moment of being saved, when you're in the moment of redemption, it's not altogether clear that's what it is and that's what you want.
Well, if it were clear, nobody would have stayed behind.
That's exactly the point. Correct. Nobody would have stayed behind. I mean, and obviously, as I always do, the illusion is to now. Yeah. Like, you know, when you're in this time and, you know, the opportunity is right there. It's right there for you. And why is it that so many of us say, you know, I don't know, it doesn't really seem like such a good idea, it's really like a little bit of a struggle, you know what I'm saying?
Even
like,
though things are hard outside, it means where they are, at least they know what it is.
It's the hard and that you know.
It's hard to go to something that's unknown.
Unknown.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's gonna be.
You mean like the desert?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right, so we're going to point out that the ultimate point of the shiur is going to be, it wasn't so obvious. Like looking back, oh, Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Jewish people went out, you know, and the sea split. It wasn't really so clear. It wasn't really so obvious. And we're going to see that explicitly and clearly. And to understand that the struggle is a struggle, but that there's clearly a right answer. You know what I'm saying? That even the unknown, our job in life, and this is in every aspect of life, is to do our best to confront the unknown and not to be afraid of it. And to make our decision based on what we know to be correct, and not to let our fears overcome us and prevent us from doing that which we know to be the right thing to do. And that's really not such a simple thing. It's really probably the hardest thing, you know what I'm saying? To overcome that, and that's what we call a leap of faith, to do what we need to do. So, let's read it in the parsha, and you'll see first from the beginning, we're going to go from the beginning to Kriyat Yamsuf, and we'll see both in the Psukim and in the Mefarshim, in Rashi, we're going to see a Ramban, we're going to see a Kli Yakar, who say all pretty much the same thing. And relate to this topic specifically. So we're at the beginning of Bashalach, which is Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayhi Bashalach Paro et Ha'am. V'lo nacham Elohim derech eretz plishtim ki karofu. Ki amar Elohim pen yinachem ha'am bir'otam milchama v'shavu mitzrayma. It's right there at the beginning, right? So when you go from Egypt to Israel, what's the most obvious way? Straight up the coast. That's called derech eretz plishtim. Okay, but Hashem didn't take us derech eretz plishtim. Why not? Why not?
We need a time to become a nation.
Ki karovu, it's too close.
Too close.
Why? What does that mean, it's too close? Ki amar Elohim, because God said, pen yinachem ha'am birotam milchama v'shavu mitzrayma. So I have a word on this that I made up, but I think there's a lot of correctness to it. Yinachem ha'am. We're, I think so? We're good. Yinachem ha'am. The nation will regret when they see war, and they will return to Egypt. Okay, so simply, therefore, why did he take them through the Yamsuf? Like, we think, it's so interesting.
So
we think, that's right. We think, oh, why did God save them in the Yamsuf? To destroy the Egyptians. Nope. That's not the real reason. The Egyptian thing was just like an add-on, a benefit. Right? They killed Paro in the process. It was nice, nice and clean. What's the real reason that he took them through the Yamsuf? That's right, because they didn't know how to turn around. Because if they went the easy way, as soon as things got tough, they would immediately say, oh, I made a mistake, let's go back. Mm. You're giving me that knowing look like, yeah, okay.
I think that's why a lot of people don't leave to begin with. Or they leave with, oh, it's hard, I'm going to go back.
Right, correct. Mm-hmm. Right, and as we know, the people that, if you go with that attitude, And then it's much easier to say, you're, you know, I'm going to go back. Then the,
it doesn't work out.
No, right, exactly.
Are you talking about your faith with drama, or are we talking about Aaliyah?
What's the difference? What's the difference? You never know, right, what I'm talking about. Right, but that's obviously there's text and there's context. There's subtext. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
I was also just wondering.
Yeah.
Okay, so they entered the Yam Suf, and as soon as they entered, did Hashem split the sea for them? Or were they actually in water for any period of time?
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Then it's like a mikvah, and it's a renewal. Ah. So.
It's like a, well, we'll get there, too. It's like a birth, too.
Right.
I once heard Rabbi Herzl Hefter, he had a beautiful vart on this. He said, like, the birth is like the nation emerging from the water, the splitting of the thing.
Yeah.
Right. That's a different shear. Okay. I had another vart also. When you take hikarovu, when it's close, one of the reasons, I speak about this with the men a lot, and they don't like when I talk about this, but the notion of the difficult journey is in and of itself a value. When it's close, meaning when it didn't take you a lot to get there.
You don't value it the same.
Correct. And you don't really value it the same. Because, I got here, you know what I'm saying? I took a flight, I came, I'm going to turn around and go home. Free flight. But if it's, but it costs money to go home. What? But if it's a journey, if it's a process, if it's a difficult process and it's a challenging process, when you've gone through the desert, when you've done that level of toil in order to get there,
that's sweet after.
Well, then you're not willing to give it up so much and say it's, you know, pen yinachem ha'am. When you see that battle, when you see that war, say, I'm not going to go home. No, I paid for this already. I've already struggled for this. We're not going home. So there's the simple, and then there's the pshat. Obviously, Rashi says quite easily, Rashi uses the simple pshat. Okay? Ki karovu, it's close. V'noach lashubo to haderach, let me try. Well, you could go back the same way that you came. Midrash agada yesh arbe. There's a lot to say about this. A tremendous amount. Okay? So therefore, Vayasev Elohim et ha'am derech ha'midbar yam suf. Hashem lahasabah. Hasev means he turned them towards the midbar yam suf, towards the yam suf. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael v'eretz Mitzrayim. And the b'nei Yisrael went v'chamushim. We're going to learn the pshat, obviously, and the drash. V'chamushim. What's chamushim?
Armed.
Right, that's what he says. Translate the armed. Where does he get that from? Chamush? Chomesh? How does that mean armed? Good question. Rashi. It says, Rashi v'chamushim, ein chamushim ela mezuyanim. Mezuyan, that means armed. Okay? Rashi, I have a short, there's a Rashi continues. The fi, sha'asei batam b'midbar, garam lahem sha'alu chamushim. The idea of they went the way of the desert caused them to go chamushim. So it's a very interesting question. When they left their homes, did they bring guns with them?
No. Well, they wouldn't have had. They would have had to have taken them from the Mitzrayim.
Where'd they get them from?
They would have had to have taken them when they took the clothing and the jewelry and all that.
So did they take them when they left?
But that wasn't the...
It doesn't sound like it, right? So when did they get them? Sorry. That's right. When did they get them? When did they get the weapons?
Did they have a war with someone?
No, it doesn't seem like that. The war with someone is later. The Egyptians have the weapons.
They're not making guns. They're sharpening...
First of all, just understand, people didn't have those with, or you don't have like, you know, metal implements around. They'd have to take them from the Egyptians somehow. Where did they get these weapons from? I mean, did they know that they were going Derech HaMidbar when they left?
I don't know.
No. Moshe only took them, they turned them in the middle. So when did they take the weapons with them? Machamushim, if they had weapons. It's not a simple question to answer. Right? It seems like they took the weapons only later. They only later got their weapons. This is before Kriyat Yam Suf. Okay? Mm. What do they expect? Let me ask you an even deeper question. What's that? They expected to fight when Moshe took them out of Egypt? You don't think so. What did they expect?
I think they expected all they were thinking about was going.
Right.
Going.
Okay.
And they were following Moshe. And I don't think they thought...
Did they trust him?
Enough to go. Yeah.
Okay.
But I think that at some point they would have thought, like, there is a chance that the Mitzrayim are going to come after us.
You think they took weapons in order to protect themselves from the Mitzrayim?
Perhaps.
Well, they don't know anything else. Do they know from anything else?
I mean, when we think all about leaving. Mitzrayim, we think of the whole nation, but it wasn't the whole nation.
Who was it?
Like the Doylem, like only a very select few.
Well, let's go on. We're going to see there's a select few, and then we're going to see, that's exactly the point, there's a select few of the select few.
Were they protecting themselves against the other Jews?
No, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. That I wouldn't say. Oh, we try to stop them from going? Interesting phenomenon. I never thought of that. Let's see the end of Rashi. Okay, let's read Rashi. Rashi continues. It seems like the way Rashi is saying it, Moshe told them we're going through the desert. Because otherwise, how would they get the weapons? They'd have to take the weapons before they left. Because otherwise, they wouldn't have any weapons. Okay? She'ilu haya derech yishuv, lo hayu mechumashim lehem kol ma shetzichim. Okay? I mean, they wouldn't have to take, if they were going derech yishuv, right, on the highway, they wouldn't need weapons. Ela ka'adam she'over mimakom lemakom. It's like a person who's going from place to place. Ubedato liknot et kol ma she'yitzarech. I'll stop off at the airport.
Get what they need.
Get what you need, you know, they'll be fine. Ava k'shehu paresh lemidbar, tzarech lizamen kol etzarech. But when you go to the desert, you gotta prepare everything that you need. So it seems like Moshe said, we're going by the way of the desert. Otherwise, how would they get the weapons? Even though from the text, it's not what it seems at all. But somehow on the way, they found some weapons. Or they started, you could imagine that, here's this band, on their way out, they realized we're not going that way. They stopped at different places on the way. They started grabbing things. They started making weapons. Now, is that smart? Or is it a lack of faith?
I think that's just smart.
Why can't it be both?
Meaning?
Hashem helps those that help themselves. So that's on the one hand, they have the Emunah and they're taking it. And on the other hand, they're going, well, we really don't know what we're getting into.
Correct.
Here.
Right.
So, to protect ourselves.
Ah.
They have
see, everyone see the, this is the classic, I think, you just articulated it perfectly.
Get
there's this line. What?
By insurance
or not. This is the line. There's a line somewhere where on the one hand I have faith, on the other hand I have to protect myself. And where's the line between those two things? So obviously in normal life, like it's a very famous truth of Rav Moshe Feinstein. They asked him, you know, should a person buy insurance? Because if you buy insurance, you're lacking emunah. So he said, you should have, Rav Moshe wrote back and said, among other things, you should have emunah in the God that gave us the idea to have insurance. You know what I'm saying? But it is a I've spoken about this before. I
have a relative who will not buy insurance.
Really, insurance is not a
No, not insurance.
If you believe in God, Hashem is delivering you. If it's biyad chazaka b'zeron etuyah, God says, I will deliver you. I will protect you, just like I did in Mitzrayim. I killed their firstborn.
But it's like we don't need tzahal.
What?
Like we don't need tzahal.
And maybe if we said we didn't need tzahal and we really believed it, we wouldn't. That's the challenge. You understand?
Yeah, but Hashem wants you to do something.
Yeah.
If you're pleading, he doesn't want you to just stand there. He wants you to go to the hospital and then somebody
sort it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, fine, 100%. But that's exactly the point. In normal life, right, there's a normal level of derech hateva. We believe in Hashem, but we're not, you ain't somchin al anes. We don't rely on miracles. We don't expect Hashem to do miracles. So that's why you have a child.
You're saying they could be smoch al anes.
There is in the middle of Nes. You can't say ain't somchin al anes.
They didn't know that.
What do you mean they didn't know? Didn't they just see it?
But you know how you were saying, sometimes when things are really close, you don't
see.
No,
they just saw Yitzhak Mitzrayim. They saw.
But sometimes
they witnessed Pesach. They witnessed Makat Bechorot. They saw Choshech. They saw the Kamako. What do you want?
They're still in the slave mentality.
What do you mean? Like, they just saw it all. And still. It's not enough.
And all the Jews came back to Israel in 1948.
Well, are we talking about Mitzvah Mitzrayim, or are we
you
talking about...
You're in the middle of the
day,
so you can't...
Do that, but it's so... That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. And we're going to see, there's groups in different groups and other groups, you know what I'm saying? It's exactly the point. As much as things change, it's always the same. Everything happens the same way. That it's right in front of your eyes. See, it's true that we have to have tzav. That's obviously true. But back then, when God says, I will deliver you, is the taking of weapons an act of choser emunah? Of saying, it's not, you know, why do you need weapons for? Didn't God say he'll deliver you? Or is that asking too much? You're looking like it's asking too much for somebody.
But
okay.
They also took food with them.
Very good. Did they?
And that took.
I always said, did they?
And that took glory. They,
what?
They had
a well, first of all, they did, but they did take food with them. What food did they take?
The but they were told to take it.
No, they weren't told to take matzah. They were told to eat matzah that night.
Oh, right.
What were they told?
Just one nut.
Right? But your example is an example for me. Why is it an example for me? What food did they take? What food did they take?
Bread.
No, they did not take bread. What did they take? Matzah. Why did they take matzah?
Well,
I just made
it.
Because
I made too much.
No.
They made leftovers.
Why did they take matzah and they didn't take bread?
Bread goes moldy.
Because bread goes bad.
No. Why did they take matzah and not take bread?
Because they had just made.
It says clearly, okay. But lo yachlu lehitmamea.
Didn't delay.
Right. Vegam tzeda lo asu lahem. That's the pasuk. And what?
They didn't make. Bread.
They didn't make. I mean, when did they start making bread?
Like the dakat tishim.
Dakat tishim.
As the text is getting.
Meaning what?
Meaning they.
If I told you, if I said your flight is on Thursday at 12.
So they didn't believe it was going to happen.
What would you do?
They didn't believe that it was going to happen.
What would you do? What would you do if you had...
Care.
You'd have the sandwiches ready. And she would have... God only knows. Right? Could you imagine, Tammy? I like that. But I didn't make any food. If you didn't make any food, what would that mean?
Oh, terrible.
What? Sure, why would I make food? We're not going anywhere.
I didn't make food, nobody.
That's right. That's exactly right. The gam te da lo. What's that?
They expected until the last minute that Hashem provided.
Ooh.
No, they didn't think it was going to happen.
What do you mean? In the end, Hashem provided.
They actually think they were going.
Right. In the end. In
but,
the,
they took, but they took joy.
That's the dichotomy of the matzah.
Yeah.
The matzah is the lechem joy. Oni, right? The lechem of on the one hand, faith, but it's also the it's representative of
affliction.
Right? What do you mean? Like you would think, Moshe said, I will deliver you on that night. We will go out of Egypt on that night. He told them. And be ready. Matnechem chagurim. Makerchem biyedchem. Your stick in your hand. And I have to tell you, if you got a stick in your hand, you also have a cooler of food ready to go.
But they took from the Egyptians all their jewels and their things and their nuts.
That's great. Money is wonderful.
So why did they didn't think they would need it?
No, they didn't take it. They want it. It's theirs. It belongs to them. They earn it.
That was their wages.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That's very different than, do you really think, like, and there's a part of us also, like, I don't know.
But
like,
they wouldn't want to take a chance taking that and then staying in Egypt and having a massive war with the Egyptians who'd just been robbed.
I don't know. No? I mean, it says that
they had
chen ha'am, that the Egyptians looked at them in a different way. Right? There's a big difference between, like, what did they expect now? God redeemed them from slavery. What does a slave do when he's redeemed? Leaves? Think about history. What did the slaves do?
Buy the property right next.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. You know what I'm saying? Well, why should we leave? We're now full equal citizens. Mm. They now look at us differently.
Now
they're the slaves.
Right. We demand.
What?
We demand.
You guys are talking. Are we talking about Egypt or are we talking about
South
something
Africa.
Else? Yeah, South Africa.
Positive.
And to be honest with you, they're not wrong. After being oppressed for so many years, like in America, the phenomenon is with the Indians. We're not going to get into it. You know, we're just guilty about the Indians, so we just give them casinos because we feel guilty, right?
It's the mentality that's wrong. It's the mentality that's wrong because if you have a mentality of the world owes me, then you'll be like a person sitting in Gaza who are forever relying and depending and crying for aid. But if you're a nation like us that
all we say is the world's never going to see that it owes us, so we better take care of ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I would agree. That's why we had to leave Egypt. Because otherwise we would have been Egyptian. And, you know, that's also very interesting. It says, Eu lo hotzianu, right? You know what I'm saying?
We wouldn't have got very far.
What's that?
So if we'd left Egypt with the attitude of the world owes me, we wouldn't have got very far.
That's true. That's very true. Okay. Let's go on.
So
that's just, we just did one Rashi so far. We just did one Rashi. And we see from this one Rashi, we did half a Rashi. We didn't finish the rest of the Rashi, which is the most shocking part that you're all aware of, right? Which just shows us the nuance of the weapons themselves are not so clear. to take the weapons, to deflect the weapons, to take the matzah, not take the matzah, to make food, to prepare. The end of the Rashi. Let's get after the parentheses.
And the funny thing is when they finally did have the war with Amalek, they didn't really need the weapons because it was all about the hands.
That's
right.
Well, they needed the weapons.
The weapons were like,
the weapons were the tool of the hands.
But without the hands, what were the weapons? They could have fought with all their might. And
Are we talking about Yitzhak Mitzrayim or are we talking about today?
I happen to be talking about Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
But it's also today.
It's the same,
right? The weapons are just the tool of the hands. And if we don't...
So it's not so clear today. I mean, imagine if we had...
It's not so explicit today.
No, it's not. It's not.
Right, but...
Halavai was.
Right, exactly.
Knowing how to use the
title. What?
Halavai.
Davar Acher. The famous part of Rashi is obviously this part. Chamushim mechumashim. What does it mean, chamushim? The Midrash says. Mechumash. One-fifth. Right? This is the famous Rashi. Echad mechamisha yatzu. One-fifth left. Va'arba'a chalaki metu b'shloshet yimei afela. Okay? And four-fifths died in the plague of, in the 3 days of afela, of darkness. Right? A very famous Midrash. But it's interesting.
Is that because they didn't mark their doorposts? Or because Hashem knew their intent? I'm like...
The whole Midrash about four-fifths dying is a fascinating Midrash. Meaning, is it a historical fact? Like any Midrash, you want to know, are the Chachamim, do they believe that it technically happened? I believe that four-fifths did not leave Egypt. Right? Did Hashem kill them in the plague of darkness? Or is that a more an allegorical allusion, like a literary... what would you... If you would say four-fifths of the Jewish people died in the plague of darkness, let's take from a literary point of view, how would you interpret that according to, you know, the Midrash is saying that?
Spiritual death. Correct.
That's exactly what it sounds like. You know, so you don't have to take the Chazal literally. You can take them much more literally. They died in the days of darkness. They were lost. Right? It's not so hard to describe American Jewry in exactly that way. We're about to lose, lo aleinu, God forbid, four-fifths of our Jewish population in a spiritual darkness. Right? In a darkness of openness. In the darkness of loss. No, explicitly it does say the darkness. But is the darkness 100%?
In the darkness, you could interpret metaphorically.
I agree with you. It means in the plague of darkness, those 3 days in the plague of darkness. But you want to take it literally? That's fine. We've discussed it before. Like, nobody noticed. Like, why did God kill them during darkness? Because he didn't want the Egyptians to say, oh, God is killing you too.
Well.
Yeah, but they wake up the next morning and like, you know, where's Frank? You know? Well, I don't know.
It was thick.
But I'm saying... After the darkness, that where all the Jews go?
Vaporized.
Yeah, you think that nobody would notice that? You know, if 3 million of them got out, so that means nobody would notice that 12 million Jews are missing.
Well, there was such destruction.
Nobody cared. It could be. All I'm saying is, this loss of them. Why? There's two interesting things to note about it. Okay, the first thing interesting to note is why were they lost? Why did they die? Why did God kill them? If God killed them explicitly, what?
They
weren't worthy of being saved?
No, I don't know. The new people.
The Eir Rav went with them.
They didn't realize.
They were disconnected.
They didn't have emunah.
And therefore?
Right. I don't know.
Maybe they were more, you know, they fully embraced the Egyptian way of Avodah Zarah, all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
They had actively said, I'm Egyptian, I'm not Jewish.
There's another way to do that, which I'm sure happened quite a bit. What was the other way to do that? To say, I'm Egyptian, not Jewish? No, Egyptians wouldn't marry them. They were Jews. Egyptians. Well, there was a very clear, explicit way of saying, I'm Egyptian and not Jewish.
By their dress.
No. A very clear way. Actually, take it the other way around. There's a very clear way of saying, I'm Jewish and not Egyptian. And anyone who didn't say this actively said, I'm Egyptian, not Jewish. How about the Korban Pesach?
If they didn't make the Korban Pesach, they didn't go.
If they didn't make the Korban Pesach, they were declaring. I mean, the ones who were saved. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Think about it. Red on your doorpost.
Yeah,
there's no more explicit.
It
was after the darkness, right? So if you take it figuratively, you know what I'm saying? There's no more explicit. But even after the darkness, you think every Jew after the darkness painted his doorpost, did a Korban Pesach? But let's not be naive. What percentage of Jews today, if I would go to where you come from, Brazil, and tell the Jews, God will redeem you, but only if you do something explicitly anti-Christian. and then he will redeem in a miraculous way. What percentage of Jews would do it? You think he'd even get close to a fifth?
But after the 10 plagues.
Not even close. What?
After
you just have to burn a cross on your lawn. Just burn a cross on your lawn and God will save you.
Where I'm from, they do that for you.
Yeah.
But they had the 10 plagues. It wasn't like a you just coming to tell them. There's 10 plagues coming to tell them.
Yeah,
nine.
What? Nine plagues. And you think it's still, they think they would still do it after nine plagues. Okay, maybe you get to a fifth then. That's all my point is. Like the Chamashim, one out of five. Which means they were lost. Either they were dead or they were spiritually dead. Let's go on.
Okay. That's such a huge difference. It's like, either millions and millions died or they were spiritually dead. Like, it's so hard to like say, to not know what actually happened.
I prefer the spiritually dead. To choose, I mean,
whatever anyone prefers, but it would be nice like to know the historical facts.
Really? What's the difference?
It's a huge difference. Talking about millions, like a genocide.
I think we do know the historical facts.
I think the historical facts. I personally believe.
The whole of Egypt would be over and over again.
You know what I personally believe? I'll tell you. I personally believe that history repeats itself over and over again. Now, historically, were Jews more Jews physically killed or more Jews assimilated?
Assimilated.
By far.
By far.
Yeah, by far. Correct. And, I remember that Meshech Chachma I told you about. Right? Why does God bring persecution?
Because it brings us closer.
Because it prevents assimilation. The persecution is the response to assimilation. That God has to remind us that you have forgotten who you are. What's that?
I can't live with it.
You can't live with that?
No.
Wow, when we get to, when is it? It is so true. When we get to, what is it? B'chukotai. Remind me, we must do that Meshechacha. We're just going to sit and do it, because it's like...
There were a lot of from Jews who died in the Shoah.
100%. Okay.
No, he's not saying everyone, but he's just saying, like, I mean, you look at what's going on, look at in America. I mean, that you have the freedom to be the type of Jew you want, and 50%...
There's a movement now, it's so interesting, there's a movement now that's considered anti-Semitic. And the way it's considered anti-Semitic is by calling people in the political sphere, they call them Israel firsters. What are Israel firsters? People who take Israel's interests
above
all else. They're called Israel firsters. And the way of like negating them is to say, oh, you're an Israel firster. You care about Israel more than anything else. And Jews in America consider that anti-Semitic.
Neocon.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Meaning, I think of myself and say, I was always an Israel firster. You know what I'm saying? That was the most important thing to me as a Jew. What's your identity? But Jews today consider that if somebody would call an American Jew, someone who considers Israel first, that's an anti-Semitic comment. What does that tell us about the Jewish identity itself? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That you consider that anti-Semitic. Chas v'shalom that I would be an Israel firster. How dare you call me an Israel firster? That's one of the things I care about.
Actually, I look at it a little differently, which is that's using the political to express what's underlying it, which is anti-Semitism. It's a new
anti-Semitism.
Socially
acceptable
anti-Semitism. That's what you think it is. It's code for.
You bet.
But what if it's true? I mean, I'm an Israel firster. Of course, I live in Israel now, so I should be an Israel firster.
From this viewpoint.
What?
I don't understand the.
What she's saying? She's saying it's not really the attitude of the Jewish person, but it's code for dirty Jew.
Exactly.
That's what she's saying.
Exactly.
That there's a code.
That's
it's become a politically correct way.
Acceptable way to be anti-Semitic.
Ah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Let's get pasuk chav, because otherwise we're never gonna. Moshe took the bones of Yosef. Vayisu misukot vayachanu beitam b'kseh midbar. They traveled from Sukkot, and they dwelled in Eitam at the edge of the desert. Vashem, chaf aleph now, yud gimel chaf aleph. Holech lifnehem yomam be'amud anan lanchotam haderech, v'layla be'amud esh v'hayir lahem, alechet yomam v'layla. God, right? He led them with this pillar of cloud, and at night he had the pillar of fire to lead them. Day and night. Lo yamish amud anan yomam ve'amud ha'esh layla lifneham. Right? They did not lose. It was not diminished. It was not dissolved. This pillar of cloud or the pillar of fire before the nation. There was always the overt presence of God guiding them farther out into the desert. Okay? And so we see that it was miraculous. It was there. And still we'll see what happened. V'daber Hashem el Moshe le'emor. Daber el b'nei Yisrael. Speak to the children of Israel. V'yashuvu v'yachanu lifnei ha'pichro chirachirot. I don't have the exact maps in front of me, but you can sort of imagine. They should turn back and encamp before Piachirot, between Migdal, which is a place, and the Yam. Meaning, I want you to go and turn around and go and camp pretty much at the beach. Okay? And what will happen? The power will say, obviously, those dumb Jews, right? They're confused in the land, and now they're trapped in the desert. And I will strengthen Paro's heart, and they will chase after them. Right? And I will come down hard on Paro and all of his military might, and Egypt will know that I am God. That's exactly what they did. So the Jewish people, they put themselves in a corner in the desert, and they encamped on the sea. Well, you got what?
That's total emuna.
Well, on Moshe's part, where are they going?
Wherever Moshe goes.
And where's Moshe going?
Wherever Hashem tells him to go.
How?
By following the cloud.
Follow the cloud. And so, I mean, do they really know where they're going? Do they have maps?
No.
Right. I mean, it's not like today I pull up, you know.
My GPS.
Right, my GPS. Oh, wait, Moshe, we're going the wrong. Could you imagine, by the way, if they all had cell phones, you know, these phones, and then
wait.
God only knows. Like, oh, wait, I don't think we should go this way. I don't really know. You know what I'm saying? The British lady would tell them, recalculating. You know, I don't think we should go that way. You know, okay. So they don't know. So they're just, and when do they find out where they're going? When do they find out where they're going?
When they get there.
When they get to
the beach.
The beach, and they look at Moshe and they say,
"Now what?" Yeah.
Are you lost? You should ask for directions, maybe. Right? You know, like you know. And when do they find out? When do they find out that the Egyptians have decided to chase after them? You'll see in a second. You got the Melech Mitzrayim Ki Baracha Am.
Which one?
Pasuk Hey. You see it? Pasuk Hey. Yeah, right there. But you got the Melech Mitzrayim Ki Baracha Am.
What do you mean?
It was told to him. Ah, very good. No, he didn't know. It turns out, according to Rashi, that he had sent people to follow them, to chase them, right? And it took 3 days. They went 3 days, and then they got lost. And then their people, it took them 3 days to go. Come back and to tell him. So that he was still he spied on them. You know what I'm saying? It's not so hard to spy on millions of people. Okay. His heart turned. What have we done? Which is easy to understand. Paro?
Not yet.
Wait a minute. And he, by Yeesor et Richbo, he, what is it, what's the words?
He readied his chariot.
Who did it for him? It says he did it himself.
He did it himself.
Ve'et amo lakach imo. Look at just Rashi for a second. Ve'et amo lakach imo. Rashi on ve'et amo lakach imo. Mashcham bedvarim. He drew them with words. And the reason why Rashi appealed to me is because I just read this book called The Book Thief. I'm assuming you've all read it.
Yeah.
What? Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. Very, very powerful book. Brilliant. And the reason I thought about that is because it's a very good Rashi because most of the book is about the power of words. Right? And how Hitler motivated his people, not with guns or not with intimidation at first, but with the power of his words.
And he We're living it today. Instead of calling it the eastern part of Jerusalem, it's East Jerusalem.
Right, words
Instead
are...
calling it...
Right, words are...
The settlements.
Right, words are very powerful. They're very, very, very powerful. They're the most powerful things. And you have to fight with words. So it's just very interesting that Rashi knows, that he's a powerful Rashi, that how did he get them, like, after all this, they would say, Paro, let it go. Just let it go. And no, he gave a speech. He gave an inspiring speech. And that's really what it takes. And it's even more interesting today that the power of words are even more powerful because of immediate, instantaneous, global communication.
Well,
that it used to be you were limited at least by the strength of your voice. And nowadays, you're not limited by the strength of your voice. Your voice is carried all over the world as quickly as it... Instantly. Yeah, I see that look on your...
So
I see that look on your face.
We're so busy listening to trivial voices that we aren't
really... Yeah. Okay. He took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt, and also other officers. The Olam Mefarshim deal with a very interesting question. Where do you get the horses from if they all died in the plague of the Dever? Yeah, all right, you can struggle with that. Ask that at the Shabbos table. Okay, how did he get the horses? This is an interesting question.
He doesn't say anything about horses.
Rechev, he didn't pay, he didn't carry the chariot, he pulled the chariot himself, I guarantee you that. What's that? Yeah, okay, there are answers, but it's not a simple question. If all the animals died. God strengthened the heart of Paro, and they chose to after Bnei Yisrael. The Jewish people, Yotzim Biad Ramah, with a strong hand. They chased after them, and they reached them. They overtook them, camped on the yam. Now they didn't overtake them. The Jewish people were sitting there. Okay, kol sus rechav paro parasha v'chelo al pi chirot lifnei baal tzifon. Where the Jewish people left, where they stopped, that's where they caught them. Uparo hikrif, and Paro is approaching. Vayisu bnei Yisrael et einehem, and the Jewish people, they lift up their eyes. Vihine, that word vihine is always good. Vihine, what's a hine?
Behold.
Behold, what does behold mean?
Seven.
Holy crap. You know what I'm saying? That's vihine. The Jewish people, what?
So no pun intended.
No pun intended. The Jewish people don't know. Jewish people have no idea. Right? Moshe knows, God knows, the Egyptians know what's going on. The people, they're like, you know, making dinner, they're like whatever. All of a sudden, they lift up their eyes over the horizon, and what do they see?
This army.
This army of people. Now, just so you know, it's not such a big army. How many people is it?
600?
1,000? How many people are there?
Sheshmeod
Rechev, and all, a few more.
Two people per chariot.
Whatever, right, whatever. How many people are there, Jews?
Yeah, but there were still slaves.
How many Jews are there?
One-fifth. Of
what? One-fifth of how many are there total? Well, we know how many there are.
3 million.
There's 600,000 men. 600,000 men with toothbrushes could destroy 600 chariots. That's a thousand to one. You tell me 1,000 to 1 can't beat a horse?
But they didn't have confidence.
Right.
They were slaves.
Right.
Slaves.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. This attitude, like they're, and what do they do?
Reduced to.
Vayiru ma'od. Right. They were greatly afraid. And we understand them. It's not difficult to imagine. We understand why they're greatly afraid. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. And they crowd out to God, which is what they should do. But then, Vayamu el Moshe, they said to Moshe, Hamibli en kvarim b'mitzayim lekachtanu lamut b'amidbar. Are there not enough graves in Egypt that you took us out to die in the desert? Mazot asita lanu lehotziyanu b'mitzayim. What have you done to us to take us out of Egypt? So if you would have taken a poll right then and there and said, how many people want to surrender and go back? Right? What would the vote have been? It would have been strongly in favor of going back. Strongly in favor. What's the only problem?
There is no going back.
There is no going back. The Egyptians don't want them back anymore. There's an interesting paradox. What have we done? We freed the Jews, but then what did they decide they want to do to the Jews?
Kill them all.
Why do you want to kill them all? Don't you want him back?
I want to restore his honor.
Right. I mean, there's a paradox in there. It doesn't make any sense. Well, you're going to go, you could capture them. They would be happy to surrender. Well, they don't want to surrender anymore. They want to destroy them. Okay? The Mefarshim talk about, there's an interesting thing about this pasuk. Says the, one second, Ramban on this. The Ramban talks about the idea of Hamibli en kvarim b'mitzrayim. Are there not enough graves in Mitzrayim? You said, Lekachtanu lamut b'amidbar, that you've taken us out to die in the desert. Now, you guys have Ramban here? Okay? Mm-hmm. Who said this? You have Ramban? Anybody? There's one here also if you want, if anybody's interested in looking. You have it there somewhere. Says the Ramban the following. Okay? He says, on the one hand, they just cried out to God. And then the very next pasuk, what do? They turn to Moshe and they say, what have you done to us? That doesn't make any sense. Why would they on the one hand cry out to God and at the very same time turn to Moshe and say, what have you done to us? Like, why are you trying to kill us?
He's handy. Yeah. He's very handy.
If you cry out to God, what does that mean?
You believe.
You believe. So then why, if you believe, would you then turn to Moshe and say, you messed me up?
I'm not sure that it necessarily meant they believed. I think it meant they were desperate.
Okay.
So they're desperate. But here's the guy who did it. It's really easy to blame him.
Says Rashi on Vayitzaku al Hashem. Rashi says clearly, Vayitzaku, tafsu umanut avotam. They grabbed onto the profession of their forefathers, meaning their forefathers believed in God. They too believe in God. The Abraham who omer, elamakom al Hashem, each one, Abraham, and Yitzchak and Yaakov, they said, what do we do? We're in trouble. What do you do when you're in trouble? You cry to Hashem. You cry to God, which is what you should do. Look at the Ramban, if you have. Ramban says the following, Eineni nir'eh, ki b'nei adam ha-tzu'akim el Hashem lehoshiyam. It doesn't seem that the people who cry out to God to save them, yibat'u b'yeshua she'asah lehem, they would reject ba'at, means to kick the salvation that he did for them, v'yomru, and say, ki tov lehem shelo hitzilam. It would have been better if God hadn't saved us. And it's a very, very, they say it in a very, very explicit and harsh manner. It's one thing to say, Moshe, save us. Moshe, we need help. Moshe, what's going on? It's another thing to say, is there not enough graves in Egypt that you took us out of here to kill us? It's a very, like, harsh thing. It doesn't seem that the same people that would cry out to God and would want God's salvation would then turn around and then in such a vulgar manner just totally reject God's salvation. And he says, V'achat mekacheshet b'neviyo. And on the one hand, they deny Moshe's prophecy. And they don't even acknowledge the salvation. And they say, it would have been better had we not been saved. And like, do you really, you deny altogether the salvation? Very good. Very good. V'alzot katuv, and it says, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, Vayamru al yam bi yamsuf. You rebelled against me in the yamsuf. It was a rebellion. Okay. Ulekach, he says, therefore. Oh, I skipped one second. Aval hanachon lefaresh. But I think it's appropriate to explain. Ki hayu kitot. There were groups. Vahakatuv yisaper al masha asukula. But the Torah is telling you,
everyone.
One group is crying out to God. And another one is denying his prophecy. That makes sense. I skipped an important part. And he's not acknowledging. So you can imagine, you think the Jewish people were all united at that time? That's another like fallacy that we have. We're not even talking about the Erev. We're still with the Jews. The Erev, they don't have a say. They just glom on. In a way, the Erev Rav are better. Because the Erev Rav had a choice. And they decided to come. So comes along the Ramban. It's so fascinating. It says there are different groups. Some are saying, oh, some are turning to God and davening to Hashem. Others are saying to Moshe, what have you done to us? Why did we even follow you in the first place? Should have just stayed home. Okay, and that's why he says you rebelled. V'chein yazir b'nei Yisrael pa'am acheret, v'yitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem. It says the Bnei Yisrael called out to Hashem, Ki hatovim bahem tzaku el Hashem, vanisharim maru bidvaro. The good ones called out to Hashem, and the rest rebelled. Ulakach amar acharkach, and that's why it says very famous, Vayiru ha'am et Hashem. Remember, we say this, Vayiru ha'am et Hashem. We say it every day, Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Abdo. So Ramban is a very interesting question. Why does it sometimes say Bnei Yisrael? And other times it says, Ha'am. So you think, oh, it's such a nice thing, not so nice, because what does that mean? That until now, until they actually saw the sea split, they did not believe. He says the following, Lo amar vayu Yisrael et Hashem vayaminu. It doesn't say, and Israel, B'nai Israel saw and they believed. Ela amar, Ha'am. It says, the Am. Ki B'nai Yisrael, Shem layichidim. The term B'nai Yisrael is for the few, the chosen few who believe. V'ha'am lahamon. And the nation of Am is for the Hamon. So who called out to God when the Egyptians came and, what have you done to us? Who called out to God and said, oh, Hashem, please save us? B'nai Yisrael. Some. A select few. And what did the rest of the people do? They ran to Moshe and they said, you messed us up. Are we talking about Mitziat Mitzrayim, or are we talking about today?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more complicated, because we can see the bigger picture, but think about people in like the camps or whatever. When they were liberated, they wanted to go back because it was like, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? It's the same concept. It's not so simple that you could say they didn't know where they were going. They didn't know what they were doing. So it's.
But they did have, at least Hashem was guiding them. Hashem was, and by the way, yeah, we are critical in some ways. But on the other hand, who knows we don't know which group we would have been in. You know what I'm saying? In that situation. You're right, after having gone through the whole thing. But there was a year of plagues, and there was Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and there was, you know what I'm saying, Makat Pachorot. It's not just, didn't just, there is a pillar of fire kind of leading you. Right? Ramban says the following, V'hine, he adds on, very interesting, Lo amru lekachtanu lamut ba milchama. Why did God, meaning he says, lekachtanu lamut ba midbar. You, God, have taken us out to die in the desert. They're in the desert. They're in the desert on the Yam Suf. Okay? But it says, why did you take us out to die in the desert? Ramban says, what do they seem to be afraid of?
Dying.
Dying by who?
In the middle of nowhere.
By who? How are they going to die?
By the Egyptians.
And the Egyptians are going to kill us. But they don't emphasize the b'milchama, the war. What do they emphasize? The desert. He says, Ki terem yiru milchama, even before they saw war, Lo ayu chafetzim latzeit el hamidbar. They didn't want to go in the desert. Why? Pen yamutu sham b'ra'av u'b'tzama. Lest they die. What are we going to eat?
Starvation.
What's going to happen? V'yitachen, and it makes sense, sh'amru lo king b'tzeitam v'odam b'eretz Mitzrayim. When Moshe said, we're going left. He says, it makes a lot of sense to think. A bunch of people said, why are we going left? We're going to die in the desert. How are we going to survive? We gotta go that way, we gotta go right, Moshe. We gotta go the other way. They had always said that. And it makes sense. I mean, how many people, when they see the path of Emunah, say, oh, that's the path, I'm gonna follow that path, and whatever happens, happens.
You know what's amazing? I've been thinking through this whole shiur of the Ethiopians who literally had to cross the desert, literally, mm-hmm. on feet,
yeah.
in terribly hostile territories. Died on the
100%.
And they
carried
off
weeks and weeks, and they
were,
you know, barefoot in the desert.
Yeah.
In the heat.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's like
they're the real Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
They got it.
And now look what that's something.
But that, what was bringing them?
That goes, you know what? You know what? That goes back to.
They couldn't go back because
they
had said they wanted to leave. They didn't have a choice, but they were, you know, it's just an amazing parallel.
Yeah, it is interesting. Did I ever tell you the story of the Ethiopian guy who I never told you the story?
Mm-hmm.
From Gadara.
Yeah.
I told you the story?
Yeah,
I told you. I told it last year. All right, I'll tell you afterwards. The crazy story. He remembers as a child, and he tells a story about being chased by cannibals who wanted to eat him. You know what I'm saying? In they weren't in Ethiopia, they were in, I think, Eritrea, because they had to go to Eritrea to get the boat to get out. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really naive question.
Sure, why not?
How much did Bnei Israel know when they left Egypt where their destination was?
Moshe told them, Eretz Zabat Chalav Udbash, the land of Canaan, the land of your forefathers. So how much did they know about the actual place itself? Pretty much nothing. Right? Which is an act of great faith. And I think that you're right. Sometimes we're too sophisticated for ourselves. The more we know about, yeah, the more we're self-sufficient, right? The more we're afraid of
giving it all up
and saying, well, putting yourselves in the Yad Hashem and saying, it's okay. Okay, let's read. I'm going to read some more psukim because I want to get to the same idea brought about by another parshan.
I just get nervous.
His mother knows what he's good. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. There he is. Okay. Okay.
Pasuk Yud Bet.
Halozeh Adavar. So they keep saying, Halozeh Adavar, Shadibarnu Elecha B'Mitzrayim Leimor. This is what we, Pasuk Yud Bet, and Perak Yud Dalin. This is what we told you in Egypt, saying, Chadal Minenu V'Na'avdav Mitzrayim, leave us alone and we'll worship Egypt. Ki Tov Lanu Avod Mitzrayim Mimutenu B'Midbar. It's better for us to live in Mitzrayim, to serve them in Mitzrayim, than die in the desert. The Rashi says a very obvious question. Look at Rashi. Asher dibanu elecha Mitzrayim, hechan dibru. We don't have any record of this conversation. So Rashi says, Yeireh Hashem aleichem b'yishpot. So Rashi says, it must be that they said that way back when, that God will judge you. When they first questioned Moshe, But it could very well be, other Parshanim, I'm sure, say, when did they say that? Ramban says, no, that's not when they said. They said it when Moshe took them by the way of the desert. We told you before we left. You're doing the wrong thing. It's not the way to go. Better for us to die. Is it better for us to die in the desert or stay here? Don't fear. Right? Hityatzavu, sit still. And you will see the salvation of God. That which you've seen Egypt today, you'll never see them ever again. Hashem yilachem lachem v'atem tacharishun. You, God will fight for you, and you just sit quietly. And by the way, they say that that's on the one, that's a level that if Hashem has to do everything for them, right, and you don't have to do anything. That's a level of direct divine intervention. We're not going to talk about each element of the psukim because there's so much to say. Mati tzakelai. So Hashem turns to Moshe and says, what are you crying to me for? Tell the people to go. Right? And whenever I read this pasuk, I always feel bad for Moshe. What do you feel bad for Moshe? What do you want from the guy? Things are not good. What? What are you crying to me for? What am I supposed to do? So I read the parsha name on that. Ve'ata, haremet matcha, lift up your staff, unite et yadcha al hayam ubika'ehu, and stretch out your hand to the sea and split it. It's a very interesting language. The imagery is very powerful. Both the staff and the hand. Viyavo b'nei Yisrael mitoch hayam b'yabasha. The Jewish people will enter b'toch hayam into the yam b'yabasha, into the dry land. V'ani hinani mechazek adlei Mitzrayim viyavo achareihem. I will strengthen the heart of Egypt, they will follow you. V'kavda b'paro b'chol chelo b'parasham. And I will come down hard. I will be hard on Paro and all of his military and all of his might. Pasuk yudchet, I mean yuddal yudchet. V'yadu Mitzrayim ki'ani Hashem b'chavdi b'paro u'b'chbo u'b'hasham. The Egyptians will know that I am God when I smite them. Okay? And by the way, I think this is the most miraculous aspect of the whole thing, is the fact that the Egyptians followed. You gotta be nuts.
Yeah.
You gotta be nuts. There's a level beyond which you said, you're just not. Well, I'll explain to you why it's not. Yud Tet. Yeah.
He was so consumed with his own arrogance.
And anger. So the angel, meaning in the form of the pillar, went behind them. And so the cloud went between them. So it divided between the camps. The Egyptians had to stop because there's fire in between. They're just blocked. Is this in the movie? The pillar of fire blocking? Does it appear in the movie, in the Prince of Egypt? No. Nowadays, they got to remake that. The special effects they could do. People think it's like the Ten Commandments. No, it didn't happen that way. The wind blew more and more. The wind started blowing more and more all night.
Azza.
Okay. What?
Azza.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Gaza.
Ruach Kadim Azza kol halayla. Vayasem et hayam l'charava vayibaku amayim. And so the wind is blowing and blowing and blowing, and it's even then, it's like a natural thing. It isn't as miraculous. I mean, of course it's crazy. It's Yad Hashem. But it's still
natural.
Right. You see it happening before you. The wind is blowing.
They had to stretch out their arm and lift up their stick.
Moshe did. Moshe stretched out his arm. Moshe's doing it the whole night. And then the wind comes and it's blowing. It's blowing and blowing and blowing. Tornado, gale force winds. One blowing this way, one blowing that way. Okay? And to the point where it's splitting.
To the point where all the water in the world.
Well, that's what, one second, Vayibaku Amayim, that's what Rashi says. Okay? The water split. Rashi says, Vayibaku Amayim. See Rashi right there. Kol Hamayim Shebaulam. Okay? Rashi says, all the water in the world, based on the Midrash. Instant Pshat. That's not Pshat. Pshat is just that water, of course. Okay? Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'toch hayam b'yabasha. And the Jewish people entered into the water b'yabasha,
on
dry land. What does that mean?
They didn't get wet.
What's unusual about that? Vayavo b'nei Yisrael b'toch hayam b'yabasha. Which one is it? B'toch hayam or b'yabasha?
It's both.
How could it be?
Because well, it's no, in the sea the where the sea would have been, but it's dry. On dry land.
No, but you expect it to be muddy.
Right, but okay.
But it was drained.
I'm pointing you. I'm pointing out the challenge of the language by Yabasha. V'hamayim lahem choma, umisolam, and the water was a wall, right on the right and the left. The whole pasuk is repeated later. If you notice it, v'hamayim lahem. When you're listening in the Torah reading on Shabbat, we read that in the Az Yashir sing songy track. V'hamayim lahem choma. But you're going to see, I just want to point out, I don't have time to read all the Pesukim. Okay? But it says the same thing. Hold your place here, and it says, look on Pasuk Chavtet. Okay? Chavtet. Verse 29. Ubnei Yisrael alchu b'yabasha b'toch hayam. V'hamayim lahem choma miminam umismolam. In fact, I don't think the first time we read it in special trap. Only the second time. We almost never. B'toch hayam, and then here it's v'yabasha b'toch hayam. Right. Obviously, you're going to have to find some parshanim to talk about that, which we don't have time to discuss. It wasn't on my topic. Sorry, can't do it all. Why repeat the same pasuk exactly twice? Exactly identical pasuk twice.
What happened in the middle?
Well, what's first? So I've always understood that this idea that they went b'toch hayam b'yabasha was not a simple matter. Ask yourself this. How deep is the Yam Suf? Just guess. Very 50 deep. Meters? At least. I'm sorry, feet. 200 feet deep? If you were given the opportunity and said, here's two walls of water. It's higher than it is wide. What's holding it up? Oh, God. Right?
Oh God!
Yeah. Have a walk.
This way.
V'hamayim lahem choma miminam umismolam. The first mayim lahem choma miminam umismolam is not of the glory of God; it's the test of the Jewish people. Right? The faith, the leap of faith here, requires them to, even if they're watching the miraculous, requires them to literally put their lives in God's hands. Right, facing certain death. There's different versions. You read the Midrash says, right? You know what I'm saying?
It, 12.
Correct. Paints your whole. Correct. The Midrash talks about all the miracles they saw. It was so miraculous.
But that's an answer to see the miracles.
Correct. I'm going to read you that Kli Yakar. What does it mean? Okay. What does it mean? B'toch hayam b'yabasha, and then b'yam b'toch hayabasha. Even as the Kli Yakar says, Khan. Hikdim tochayam liyabasha. Here we see they went into the yam, the water, and then it's dry land. Ubisamuch, later it says behepach. So it's the opposite. A yam betoch, you know, biyabasha betochayam. Ubnei Yisrael alchu biyabasha. Gam kol hapasuk ahu miyutar. Says that whole other pasuk is extra. V'kan ne'amar v'hamayim lehem choma male bevav v'hamayim lehem choma. Ubisamuch ne'amar chaser below vav. He says, I think. The fee, a second, why? Shehayu Yisrael nitunim badin im lihinatzel o lihitava im Mitzrayim. He says, because God still hadn't decided whether to drown them or to save them. Ve'al pi zeh nuchal lomar, and based on this we can say, Shehayu Yisrael kitot al hayam. Sound familiar? There were groups. Miktzatam tzadikim, some were righteous. Miktzatam ptane emunah. And some were of lower faith. Kinoach, like it says, Mipnei Meham Babur, that God had to force Noach, okay, to go into the ark. V'hineh ha-tovim Yisrael batu u'techach em hayam. Right, the tovim, those who were faithful, they jumped right in. We know that Nachshon ben Aminadab. He went in the water, the famous midrash, without even water splitting. That's an interesting midrash in of itself. God didn't split the sea until somebody jumped in. Okay. But nonetheless, they believed in Hashem. Aval habchutim, but the lower, banim lo emunba, my children who don't have faith. Halchut chila bayabasha. They would only go when it's already dry. Kilo haeminu ba'alohim. Alkein, lo nichnesu otoch hayam, ad shira'u tchila ta'yabasha. V'lahem, and for them, Hamayim hayu nachoma chema, the wrath of God. Aza, strong, fierce. Ki hayu netunim badin im lehinatzel o lehitavas. So interesting. We saw two parshanim, Ramban and Kli Yakar, on two different psukim, who say the same thing. Who say, don't think that the Jewish people were this one monolithic group of faithful people. Okay? We're going to wrap it up. No, they were different groups. Some more faithful, some less faithful. Some devoted and willing to put their lives on the line. It's, wait, what do I care? God will save me. And some saying, you know, I'm not going to go unless it's all dry, unless it's all set for me. So are we talking about Yitzhak Mitzrayim? We're talking about today. And what's our responsibility? Responsibility is to try to get as many people as possible to jump in. But the answer might not be so much to tackle the problem of putting the faith in front of them as much as trying to help them increase their level of faith. And maybe sometimes we argue the wrong point. We sometimes say, don't you see what I see?
No.
And the answer is, everybody's watching the same thing. Everybody sees the same thing. But they're all coming at it from a different perspective. And so instead of trying to get people to see the facts that they already see, maybe we have to work more on trying to have them be able to see the perspective that we have and have the faith that they need to have in order to see it as dry land instead of seeing it as a fiery, fierce sea that's only danger and scary. All right, we got work to do.